This episode was recorded in memory of Pearl Salato, the founder of the DJ Professional Pet Assisted Therapy Program and the Windwalker Humane Coalition. Welcome to another episode of Downtime with the Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Taylor, and the branch librarian at the Oaklawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Cynthia Van Odenhove, and I am the director of the DJ Professional Pet Assisted Therapy Program. It is offered through Providence College at the Continuing Ed Department, and it's a program that is about 25 plus years old. And with me is
Cheryl Ficarra. I am the current president of Windwalker Humane Coalition for Professional Pet Assisted Therapy.
Fantastic. Thank you both for joining us this afternoon. A little bit later in the show, we will talk about the work that both of you have done training therapy animals and kind of what the difference is between service animals and therapy animals and some of those other working animals you'll see out in the world. But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with what have you been reading?
So I have been reading several things over the last few months, and you'll get a sense of who I am by what I'm reading. I just finished a book called The Virtues of Aging by Jimmy Carter. He wrote that about 20 years ago, but it's still a fabulous book. I also just finished reading Remarkably Bright Creatures, which is a novel by Shelby Van Pelt. And I finished reading a children's book called Wiley's Wishes, which is about how a therapy pet can assist children who are going through traumatic events.
Awesome. I love history, and especially a period in history that my parents sort of grew up in, which is just before World War II era. And I find that a very fascinating time. So I read a lot about history, but about regular people. And that went through that period of time. And I just read a fascinating book named They Fly By Night. And it was about an incredible group of women who were Russians, and they flew planes into Germany to try and save their country from Hitler and company. Wow. It was an amazing book of bravery. And the planes they flew were held together by like bubblegum and tape because they wouldn't let the regular flyers fly those horrible planes. It's just a fascinating story because these were just regular women. Wow. That found this incredible bravery during that period of time to try and save their country. I love stories like that, just regular people, so to speak, stepping up to the plate in tough times. That was an excellent book. I also read an awful lot about animal behavior, and which makes me laugh because my dogs would be better behaved than they are. But I do an awful lot of reading about animal behavior, and I love the books by Susan Clothier, Emma Parsons, and I'm also reading a couple of books right now on animal-assisted therapy, which is what we do, by Aubrey Fine, an amazing gentleman that was actually the founder of our organization. He was one of her mentors, if you will, Aubrey Fine, Theoretical Foundations of Animal-Assisted Therapy. These are amazing books. Naturally, I do that because of what I do for a living, and, you know, it's very beneficial to our students if I can share what I learned.
For sure. And it was interesting, the World War II book you brought up, because I had heard of that group of women. And I think I vaguely remember hearing, I don't know if this was in the book, that like sometimes they had to fly with the engines off and just kind of like with the lift that they had in order to like go over things like stealthily. Yeah, that's so they like your engine off in a plane, like you said, held together by bubblegum and tape. Must have been one of the most terrifying
things.
They
knew that most likely they were not going to return, most of them. Mm-hmm. And they were all set to, if they crash landed and survived, well, they would take their own lives because, you know, of what could happen to them if the Germans caught them. Yeah. And they figured that once they went out, they wouldn't be coming back. These were all single women, most of them. And they just loved their country and they wanted to try and do something to save it. And they would go out before the regular flyers and drop bombs to try and clear the way for the regular pilots to go out and do their jobs. They were just incredible women. And many of them obviously did not survive. and the ones who did were never talked about. It was very quiet. And it's just recently there's been some books about these fabulous women. Now that they're you know, talking about women in these kind of situations. And most of them would just came home and then were unknown to history and just went right back into whatever they were doing in the field, housewives, whatever they were doing. Amazing. Amazing story of survival. And one other one that I read that just came to mind, and I'm sorry, I can't think of the name of it, but it's about the actress Hedy Lamarr. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, she also was like created basically the technology for us to have Wi-Fi.
Exactly. This is why we're able to talk on our cell phones today, because of what Hedy Lamarr did. She was obviously, as we know, that most beautiful and famous actress. But her claim to fame was during World War II. Her father was an engineer, a very influential engineer, and she was Austrian. So when Germany took over Austria and so on, she ended up marrying a man, an Austrian man, who ended up working with the Nazis. He was very wealthy and very influential, and she actually ended up entertaining these people. Hitler came to dinner, so to speak, one night, and she ended up actually being like a spy, trying again, trying to save her countrymen. And at some point, she had to escape, and she got to the United States. She was a very brilliant woman, and she invented this, well, what today we know as Wi-Fi, and went to the U.S. Navy with it and said, I've got this idea that we can do, because the German submarines were taking out all our ships in the North Atlantic. And that's where sonar came from. It's just an amazing story. But the Navy said to her, basically, you know, thank you very much, Miss Lamarr, but, you know, the Navy's not going to take anything from a woman. Can you imagine that today, hearing something like that? So they basically stole her idea is what they did. And so her first claim to fame was seeing what she developed being put into aircraft and the Navy's ships during World War II. And now today it's the basis of our Wi-Fi and our cell phones. She's an amazing woman. Absolutely. I love reading stories about amazing women, amazing people. Me too.
And especially how we find out years later that a lot of the accomplishments that were previously cited to someone else, usually a man, find out later were actually these amazing, intelligent women who were.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So those are the couple of books that came to mind that I really was impressed by. They weren't necessarily the best written books, but they were extremely interesting because of the women in their lives, incredible lives.
So besides reading, have either of you been watching anything interesting lately?
I don't watch a lot of TV, so I tend to listen to podcasts because that way I can keep my hands busy. But I do have a few podcasts that I listen to regularly just to keep up to date on the news. But for TV, then most of what I'm watching is football, because now it's the playoff season and I don't have to worry about the Patriots losing because they're out of it.
Oh, that's funny. I'm pretty eclectic, again, like my books, but I don't watch regular TV. I will tell you that I binge watch All Creatures Great and Small. And the new series, season number 3, has just come on last night. So that's a delight. I like to record them, DVR them, and then binge watch them at a time where I just feel like sitting and watching TV. And what else? I know I'm kind of boring, but I'm an old movie fanatic. I love movies from the 30s and the 40s. I love old classic, yes, black and white movies. And I have a friend who is into it as well. So recently we've been watching separately and then chatting about Hitchcock movies. So I know I'm boring, but it's what we love to do.
No, it's interesting to look at where we started in terms of movie making, but also some of they were doing a lot of those classic movies were doing interesting things, mm-hmm. like film-wise, without all the technology we have. You know, you have Gone with the Wind with that shot that was like the most extras that they'd ever done.
Atlanta scene, yes. That was amazing. And I think in another life I could have been a movie historian, because that's the level at which I get geeky about movies. I get into the directors and the photography and the methods. And I think it's one of the reasons why I can watch a good movie over and over and over again, because it's even beyond the dialogue. I notice all of these things. I used to drive my husband nuts, but I do thoroughly enjoy it. Because I'm a history buff, I think we also see a lot of history in movies.
Absolutely.
Especially things that we didn't grow up with. And I find that fascinating.
Yeah, even we've talked about on this show before, even like watching things that, you know, you watched as a kid or like mm-hmm. you watched even 10 years ago and just being like, wow, like sometimes they age well, sometimes they don't. But it is kind of like this capsule of time that's
it sure is
gone. So
mm-hmm. it sure is. Yes. Yes. So I hope that helps you get to know us a little bit. I don't know.
Definitely. So last night I watched Catherine Called Birdie, which is this movie that Lena Dunham produced, which I know people have very polarized opinions about her, but I still enjoyed the movie thoroughly. It was about this young girl. She's 14 and it's set in the medieval time, but it's not super historically accurate in terms of like medieval dress or even some of the things that happen, partially because it's supposed to be kind of like a comedy, like right. tongue-in-cheek satire, but I still enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun, but yep, so it's about mm-hmm. young woman Catherine, but everyone calls her Birdie, and her family falls on some hard times financially, and really the only plausible option for them to get out of debt is to marry Birdie off to a wealthy man. So it's all about, and she's a very kind of like strong-willed young woman. She doesn't really like the fact that the only kind of real future or destiny for her is to be a wife and a mother. She's watched her mom lose, I think, five or six children between her being born and the present. You could see how that would make you somewhat disillusioned by the idea of your only future being, you know, a wife mm-hmm. and a mother. But it ultimately has a pretty happy ending, and it was a fun movie. I enjoyed it.
That sounds like something I would look into.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the recommendation.
Yeah.
You're welcome. And we'll return to the show after a quick break. The library is launching a new collection, School Tools. Check out tools, toys, games, and interesting objects for learning and play from Central Library, including a microscope, toy cash register, robots, and more. The tools are meant to support parents who are teaching at home and encourage kids to pursue their passions. If you have suggestions or feedback for this new collection, email Emily at emilybrown@cranstonlibrary.org. Users of Cranston Public Library can now access their favorite digital magazines using Flipster. Flipster offers an easy, browsable reading experience. Users can browse magazines by category as well as perform searches for specific titles. An online newsstand provides a carousel of most recent issues as well as a carousel of all issues, allowing for quick access to magazines. Go to cranstonlibrary.org and click the link Online Resources You Can Use Now to find more information on how you can access Flipster. Flipster also has an app available on Android and iOS. All right, so I want us to have enough time to talk about what you both came here to talk about. Let's start off first with Cheryl. Will you talk a little bit about Windwalker Pet Therapy?
Sure. So Windwalker, we have a philosophy that is, I think, fairly unique to us. And it's thanks to our founder, Pearl Salato, that our therapy pets are family members, and we treat them as family members. And we look for them to be eager and spontaneous in the field. So as opposed to a lot of times we see dogs that are out that are service dogs, and they're highly trained to perform a task. That's not what our dogs are. Our dogs are therapy dogs, and we want them to be eager and spontaneous and to really have that bond with the clients that they interact with in a very joyful and natural way. And what we really want to do is develop standards for professional pet-assisted therapy that allow us to gather to build a better world for all living things. And we look at social reform, public policy legislation, as well as interacting with educational programs at all levels from K through 12 and even colleges and universities, as well as medical facilities and nursing homes, any facility where we can bring the joys of pet, having a family pet interacting with clients on a one-to-one basis.
Absolutely. Beautifully said. Mm-hmm.
So to do that, we rely on a college-educated curriculum. So we are currently in the continuing ed program of Providence College. And our members, they have a family pet that pretty much is going to tell them, oh my gosh, I love people so much. And a lot of them self-select. The pets self-select our program because they come to us and they say, my goodness, my pet is so friendly. I just feel as though he or she has more love to give than we can give. So they come to our program and the first thing we do is we teach the humans. We teach the humans the basics of the philosophy, our ethics, and our mission. Everything that we do in our organization has to be in the best interest of the pet. So we're not going to force them to do tricks or to train them in a particular way. We're going to just capitalize on their innate ability to provide some real therapeutic value for the populations that we meet. So the first part is to get our humans to understand the philosophy and the theory behind what we do. The second course, we do hands-on training for a full semester that teaches our pets skills that make it safe for them to interact in the facilities they're going to walk into. Most dogs don't walk into a nursing home, a rehab facility, or a classroom where there are noises, smells, there's things that are very different for them to interact with. So we teach those. And then the third one is a 20-hour internship where they work hand-in-hand with a mentor to really hone in those skills to make sure that when they go out into the world, they can behave in a way that is ethical, that is safe, and that provides a great value to everyone that they interact with.
Absolutely.
I think you may have picked up from what Cheryl has said that our program is a lengthy one.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a 3-course program, and it can take close to a year to complete. And if I add it all together with all the research that the students do, the homework that the students do, and the practice time with their pets, we're talking easily over 100 hours total of their time and their work and their effort to go into succeeding through this program and getting their certificate from Providence College. And then they're eligible for credentialing through Windwalker, our professional organization, our credentialing agency. They get their ID badges and then they can go out and create their own programs. And the difference between there are several differences, but one of the main differences between what we call the DJ program and other pet therapy programs is, as Cheryl says, where our main focus is on family therapy pets, because we believe that the benefits that come out of pet therapy really stem from the bond and the love and the trust that you have already with your dog or your cat. And yes, we've had several cats go through the program and do beautiful work. So we don't train dogs. We literally train the people and educate the folks, the people. And we look for dogs who have awesome temperaments. That's got to be there, obviously, that love to interact with people. And then we throw in all the skills that we would like to have them have to make them a safe and beneficial team. And we credential them as a team. We like them to have basic obedience under their belt before they come into the program so that we can get into doing better things. But we certainly help with that as well, don't we, Cheryl?
Yes, we
absolutely
do.
Yeah. But it's really a hands-on experiential program that starts with a pet and a bond that you have with your own pet. We consider ourselves guardians to our pets and our pets as family. And then you grow from there with your pet into, as I said, a safe and beneficial team. You also learn the ethics of pet-assisted therapy, and that's very, very important. And you also learn to create your own professional pet-assisted program. And that is also very different from a lot of other pet therapy programs out there in the world. So if you, for example, want to work in a school, we help you create a program that would be tailored to what your dog is able to do, what your dog or your cat likes to do. And it could be elementary, it could be high school, it could be college, it could be a healthcare setting, as Cheryl says, it could be social services. These programs are goal oriented, and it's start to finish, from an introduction about who you and your pet are, right down to the goals and the benefits that you hope to bring your clients. So it's a wide scope. That's why the program is as in depth as it is, and takes, frankly, as long as it does. So this isn't something someone does in a matter of a few weeks. And that's why it's a professional program, and that's why it's a university certificate program. It's a little different, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you both started to touch on this a little bit about how the animals, and by extension, the people that you train to work with the animals, are doing therapy animal work. So could you talk a little bit more about the differences of like who benefits from interacting with a therapy animal versus service animals that do a task for someone?
So I do a lot of work with kids in the elementary schools. And so one of the things kids want to learn is just that. What's the difference between a service dog and a therapy dog? It's all kind of lumped together for them. So for them, the easiest way I describe it is a service dog is a highly trained dog that learns very specific tasks and may actually be raised for that purpose. And then they are matched with a human, and that dog lives their life to serve that person, if you will, needs, whatever that person needs that dog to do. And it's very, very specific. That dog is there for that one person. And in many cases out in the world, you really can't interact with that dog because that dog may be quote unquote working.
Mm-hmm.
A therapy dog is a dog with an awesome temperament that loves people, may have some very special skills as some of ours do, but they are working with a wide range of people. It could be an entire group of elders at a healthcare facility. It could be with an entire group of third graders like I work with my dog. It could be in a social service agency, mental health issues. These dogs want to be interacting with everyone they see. And if I'm out with my therapy dog, people will ask, may I pet your dog? And the answer is absolutely. That's what they're there for, to interact with people, everybody. So those are the two main differences. So our teams go into all types of different facilities, and some of them I've just mentioned. But I think the larger group of them go into healthcare facilities. I work in a lot of rehab settings. I work with adults with disabilities, children in the third grade classes. We have
the courthouse.
Oh, please talk about the courthouse, Cheryl.
So we also have that go to the family courthouse. And they are outside in the waiting areas. Now, remember, these are dogs that they want to meet everyone. You think of these dogs as politicians in the dog world or the cat world.
Mm-hmm.
The cats are the same way. Their personality is, oh, I want to meet this person. Oh, this person smiled at me. I'm going to double around and see if I can get him again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy, this person wants to meet me. So these folks are coming into family court. That's no matter why you're there, it's a stressful day.
Mm-hmm.
And they see a dog. And just being able to sit down quietly and pat the dog for a little bit relieves the stress and anxiety. And they're just incredible. And the stories we hear from the guardians and the people that are interacting with these dogs are, oh my gosh, I was so stressed out. It was so wonderful to have a dog come up to me and just put their head on my lap and they just pat me for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of moments that we're really looking for, no matter what facility we're in, but the courthouse, the reading programs. We're in a tremendous number of libraries. We're helping reluctant readers that are really our pets are making a connection. I mean, I like to say, I don't even have to be here. I'm the dog lady.
Mm-hmm.
No one remembers my name, but they all remember Daisy. They all remember my pet because they're the ones doing the magic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. Yeah, we just... you know, their chauffeur and their water carriers. No, seriously, we're a little one of that. We look at ourselves as their guardians and their facilitators, but we need to know our dogs very, very well because we need to know what their strengths are so that we can help them figure out what type of pet therapy would be best for them, because they're a number one responsibility. They need to be happy in what they're doing. So as Cheryl said, we would never force a dog to do something. We want them to be interactive and spontaneous, and they must love this work. And that's truly the key. That's truly the key. Pearl Salato, our founder, would always say that pet assisted therapy needs to be a three-way street. The client needs to benefit. The pet needs to benefit, and even the pet's guardian needs to benefit. It's a joyful thing when you see it work. Everything from stress reduction, as Cheryl says, to education purposes, we do all sorts of programs. And our pets are really the ones that make the heart connection. They touch people's lives in ways that I am never going to be able to do. They get through to folks that I am never going to be able to get through to. It's just something about the look and the touch of a wonderful, friendly dog or cat that just goes right to the heart of a person. And incredible things can happen as a result of that. And that's what we try and foster.
Do you have any advice for, people just in general, but even maybe people who work with the public and deal with people coming in with animals, saying, this animal can come into your business or establishment because they are my therapy animal?
That is a topic that is it's a can of worms in some ways, I would say. What I will tell you is that we have, and I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately, we have, thanks to Pearl Salato, therapy dogs in Rhode Island, credentialed therapy dogs going through a program like ours, for example, have access to any facility at any time as long as they're working.
Mm-hmm.
That's important, and that is on the books. That is a law. When it comes to what I'm going to call, I'm just going to lump into a group called, emotional service, emotional support dogs. We don't get into that at all because it is sort of a can of worms. We mm-hmm. understand that people need it, but I don't know of a credentialing agency that actually handles that. Service dogs, yes, as we discussed, mm-hmm. service dogs is totally different. But emotional support dogs seems to be something that is growing in our society today. And the only advice that I would give someone is if they're going to do something like this, they need to make sure that their dogs have a wonderful temperament and are well, I'm going to say in this case, well-trained as far as obedience goes, because it can cause a problem with a dog who is not well-socialized and not very obedient when out in society.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very important things. And I think that of anyone who's out there with their pets, with their dogs, anyone.
Yeah. And if I could just jump on that.
Sure.
All of our pet therapy teams, our credentialed teams,
mm-hmm.
There are certain things that they always carry with them that I'm not so sure happens with other groups. But I know with our groups, they have proof of insurance through either their renters or their homeowners. They have their current rabies documentation. They have a letter from their vet indicating that they're in good health and capable of performing pet-assisted therapy in a safe way. And they have their dog license that's current and up to date. And if they don't have any of those documents, they're not doing pet therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And even when we're in the process of training our students, the first thing they do when they go into their mentoring situation, their third course, is they got to make sure when they walk in the door that they got their papers, because if they don't, they get turned right around. So our dogs, we know, have all this documentation with them, and it's current and it's up to date. And we're as an organization,
mm-hmm.
we're making sure all those standards are met. I'm not sure that those types of standards exist in the realm of support.
That's the problem. Yeah. We have a high standard of practice.
Very high.
And each one of our teams must comply with a list of standards that we have. Every single one of those boxes needs to be checked.
Right.
And I think that it would be the same for a service dog as well.
It would.
Because there is a service dog organization. This is why it's important to have credentialed dogs. This is why it's important to have people who have gone through programs and have graduated successfully. And this is why it's important to have agencies who follow them and that they're responsible for certain standards of practice when they're out in the field. The emotional support thing is kind of a nebulous thing right now. Hopefully someday it will change, because we do know that there are people that benefit by it.
All right. So is there anything else that either of you want our listeners to know about therapy dogs or about your program?
How to find us would be nice.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Okay. So our professional organization is Windwalker Humane Coalition is our name. We are on the web at windwalkerpettherapy.org. There we have an awesome website. We can find out everything there is to know about pet therapy, about our organization, and learn about upcoming classes at Providence College. And the program itself is called DJ. That means Dog of Joy, which was Pearl Salato's dog. She named her program after that, after her dog. It's the DJ Professional Pet Assisted Therapy Program. And that can also be found on the website for Windwalker. And also calling Continuing Ed Providence College. We have classes probably starting up again in the spring.
Fantastic. So we end the show with a segment I call The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or books related question. And I thought to keep it on theme with today's topic, I would ask you both, what is your favorite book featuring an animal?
Oh, my. Where do I begin?
Oh, I think it's got to be Charlotte's Web.
Oh, I was going to say he did turn into a real rabbit at the end, didn't he?
Yeah.
Velveteen Rabbit, Charlotte's Web. Oh, those are awesome books.
Yeah.
I read a fabulous book about Rin Tin Tin last winter, 2 winters ago. The true life story of Rin Tin Tin that just blew me away. It was fabulous. I'm getting old.
And my first book was the one I told you about that I just finished reading was Wyman's Wishes. Because one of the things that I'm always on the lookout for is children's books or just any sort of any age that talks about a pet therapy in action. Mm-hmm. And Wiley is a pet therapy dog, and his goal when he starts with a child, this in this case a traumatic event happened to the child, was to make sure that they feel loved, feel strong, and feel unafraid.
I like
and
that.
That's what the therapy dog does. So, any book about dogs is good for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So many more flooding into my mind, but I know we don't have all day. So,
because of Winn-Dixie had a dog in it, right? Winn-Dixie was the dog?
Yeah.
It was so long ago that I read that book.
I have the book to read. In fact, the teacher that I work with at the school with my dogs gave me that book, and I haven't read it yet.
Right.
I'm going to have read it. She says it's fantastic.
Yes, I remember enjoying it in like the third or fourth grade, maybe.
Uh-huh.
So that'll be my answer, even though I forgot that Winn-Dixie was the dog. I'm sorry, Winn-Dixie. All right. Well, thank you both for joining us. And thank you everyone for listening. If you'd like to answer our last chapter question or suggest a last chapter question of your own, you can reach out to us via email at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. You can also reach out to us via social media with the hashtag downtimeCPL. And if you're feeling generous, please rate on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening. And this has been another episode of Downtime. Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Nomi Haig, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza. And our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime. All right.
Can we clap?
Yeah, go ahead. You're clapping for yourself. You're giving yourselves a round of applause.